transhumanization or trans-personification, or trans-individualization in Tanakh. Well,
no.
What?
No.
A Misha change, yes, but a correct change, correct, that was before Misha, correct, a Misha change completely. But
after? Yonah.
Well, Yaakov and Yonah. Yonah.
Yonah.
No, 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 but change. There is a very, you know, not to go into here. The Hoyoven soul was anointed by Sender. The Sender of Hoyoven. And the Rambam, in the Sefer HaTorah, has introduced Samuel's statement as the basis of prophecy. The Anviki Be'acho Shomu'il, in Togato Chevel Midi, Yehudi Mi'adamo, the Mishneyan Nezel Seitz Echolim Zechimer, Ve'eno Nisnabi, the Tolfo Alecho Ruach Adishon, the Nisnabit Soyemoyen, the Nepachto Mishach, these three words, the Nepachto Mishach, is a transhumanization. The Thou shalt need to bend that traffic, coming down from the high places, with the cyclones, and the kindred, and the pipe, and the heart, before them, to get a strange picture. Why did Shmuel mention all those musical instruments? Before them, and they will be prophesying. And the Spirit of the Lord will come mightily upon thee, and thou shalt prophesy with them, and shalt be turned in another man. This is the... When the Rambam speaks about the Zohar, he sees the Novi turns into a different place. We have it in Yisrael HaTorah and Mordechai. It's in the Perek of the Zohar. What Perek is the Zohar? Perek Zayin the Zohar, no. Yisrael HaTorah, yes, correct. We'll find it, don't worry. There's Perek Zayin, right? And the Spirit of God will descend upon him. Tisariv nafshi b'malas ha-malochim, and Yitroim Ishim. He will join the angels, who are called separate intelligence. V'yotzeich li'ishachar. He will turn into a different side. What does the Novi mean? A different personality. This is the story of Elisha. Now Elisha's story is beautiful. I mean, how does that Novi... How does the Tanakh describe Elisha before Eliyahu appeared? As a selfish boss who ran his farm strictly and supervised the slaves. I mean, he should do a day's work. It's very strict, sometimes cruel. Because otherwise, he wouldn't have been a rich farmer. And the very moment Elijah took off his coat and threw it to him, so right away, he became a different person. He forgot about his father, about his mother, about his farm, about his slave. He forgot about everything, which was so, which he cherished so much just a 5 minutes before, ago. And by Yilech Achar Elisha, Eliyo, he joined Eliyo, the lonely Eliyo, without his mother, father, without the hometown. We don't know where Eliyo is. An anonymous person, Elisha became like Eliyo. No, I don't know if any God has mentioned. I don't know if any times you do, I don't know. But I don't know any of that. Nepachto Vishacher, transhumanization. It means that men may shed one personality, one identity, and assume a new identity. What kind of an identity is the prophetic identity? It's an exalted, ecstatic identity. One that is blessed with clairvoyance and visionary capacity, visionary power. The same happens to our children. The great miracle which happens to the individual who rises suddenly, unexpectedly, from an ordinary existence to an ecstatic, prophetic existence, happens to the Baal Shem.
The same happens to the Baal Tshuva who repented, not in response to external conditions, but to an inner call, which addressed itself to him. What makes men share the one identity and assume another one? What makes them share? What made Charles shed his old identity? What? I read to you the passage tells us. There are no superfluous words in Tanakh. What did Charles experience when he met the heavenly being, the band of those prophets? What did he hear, Charles? What did Saul hear? He saw and he heard something. What did he hear? The Tanakh one has got to be sensitive. What did he hear? The Pasuk speaks of musical instruments, of naval, of saltery, and what else? I don't remember. And a timbrel, and a pipe, and a harp. Why the Pasuk mention it? Saul heard what they heard. What did he hear? He heard an interior. He experienced an interior addition of mystery, of mysterious music. Something within it. I mean, the psaltery and the instruments outside played a very little role. They symbolized the state of mind of Saul that he met in the ear. He was suddenly enchanted by an inner music, mysterious music, coming from nowhere. Rich with living and living joy. He experienced something which he has never experienced before. And the great experience, the experience most probably of a harmony or reconciliation of man with himself. Because if man wants to reconcile himself with God, the first task he has to fulfill, the first challenge he must meet, is to reconcile himself with himself. And this reconciliation, this harmony, was experienced by Saul, and he began to prophesy. Let me explain what I have in mind when I say man must reconcile himself with himself. And what I say now, don't take it as homiletics. I don't have contempt for homiletics. And as a fact, I am a pretty good Maggid. But what I say here is not Maggid, it's more philosophical interpretation. The Pasuk in Vayetze says, Vayachalim v'nesu l'mut v'arzo v'reishe magia ha-shamaymo u'malach ha-elikim elem v'yedem. You all know the Pasuk. It's a popular Pasuk, known to everyone. And he dreamed and beheld a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached the heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. The Talmud didn't understand it. For many years, it's a business to walk up the ladder and to come down the ladder. But Malachim are busy. When Malachim walked up and came down? Was it the exercise? I mean, what? Apparently, they had some objective. There was that the ascending and descending on the ladder meant something. It was meaningful, very important, very significant. Why was it so important? So the Gemara in Chum gives a very strange answer. Eilin lemato, unistakli, they climbed up to heaven to take a look at what? At the image of Jacob, which is engraved in the celestial throne. Muzdukne shoyankev chrusa bekisakot. The image of Jacob is engraved in the celestial throne. And they came down to take a second look the image of Jacob, who rested, tired and exhausted, slept on the cold stone of Bethel. They were engaged in a comparative study. Whether these two images are identical or not. In other words, what does the Gemara tell us? There's a very important mission in Allah in Aston Field. The Gemara tells us that a man has two images, or he projects two images. One and they engraved in the divine throne, another one projected by man on earth. There is an ideal image to man, and there is an empirical image to man. Man, we speak about man, sometimes you have in mind the ideal man. Man, the way God created him. Man endowed with talent and gift, who reflects the glory of God. And sometimes, when we say man, that man, this man, we have in mind empirical man. And I want to tell you, the dual image of man is not a figment of our agadic fantasy. Oh no. To me, as far as concerned, it's a reality. We experience it quite often. Don't we experience during short intervals, short and very rare intervals, a certain serenity or quietude of the spirit? I do experience it from time to time. Sometimes I'm full of worries. I don't think there's another person who worries so much as I do. And I don't know about what I do worry. And if I have no cause, I look for a cause. Yeah. But say, I'm always tense. I'm restless. I cannot take a vacation. You know, the best relaxation for me when I teach. Right. But I'm tense while I teach. But this state of permanent tenseness, permanent tension, and worry, that many times it's come to a stop, to a close, at short intervals, and I suddenly experience the serenity and quietude of the spirit, certain peace of mind, and a feeling of contentment. Not because I have accomplished something on earth. Such moments come suddenly, unexpectedly. I've accomplished something, I have defeated an enemy or conquered China. But because that time I feel that I found myself. Somehow this duality in man, between the Dmus Dyeikan, between the image projected, that I project on the celestial throne, and the image I project on earth, those two images join, merge into one image. And I found my unit. Talking about this, but I don't know, I think I am. So to speak about modern, this chapter in the Bible, I mean, does not apply to modern man. Modern man is just the opposite, the very opposite of the person who is portrayed by this psalm. Which psalm do I, am I referring to? Really, it's a famous psalm, Yisrael Mungoyim, particularly in America.
Hashem
Rei Re'achso. What does psalm? Hashem God is my shepherd, Hashem not one. What does the psalm express? What kind of a person is he? He's not afraid. Gam Kino begins some of us, even so across the valley of the year of all. I am not, won't be afraid of anything evil. Keatu him. Man, companion of God. Not only friend, companion. I can be a friend of somebody, but without being his companion. There's a higher degree of closeness between man and God. Being God's companion. And Hashem Rei is my shepherd. Le'echso ben Yedeshi Yavetein Amnuchet Noayim. It's a beautifully described man who found, who achieved the unity of the two images. The most lemalo and the most lemalo. Or the adyoike lemalo to use the evil frame. And the adyoike lemalo. I feel it usually on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, when I say Malkus or the Chayin for Shevet, I tell you, I cannot draw on your religious experience. I don't know them. I can't draw on mine. So please don't consider it as vanity or as an act of pride when I say, hey, I have no one else here. I have no other self to draw upon. Lashoni and Kippur. And I say, Zichrenes, Malchus, beautifully, beautifully written. Otto, the famous philosopher of religion, the German philosopher of religion, Otto was a friend of the Jews too. He writes that such literature as Zichren Kintarnachon, or Malecha Kolel Kolel Bechadecho, and Asa Zichren and Asa Yom, has not been written by any other, by any religious community. As far as exaltedness and awe, and the majesty of the expression, and the sweep of the vision, but there is no other literature that can compare itself. The finest is, he was an expert in it, in those things. When I say those things, I feel this, I experienced that kind, this kind of surrender. And now we understand it means, what does Tshuva mean, personalistic Tshuva? And you have that, we have the job developed. What does personalistic Tshuva mean? What does it mean, personalistic Tshuva? The real Tshuva, the Tshuva which is bound up, this Tshuva Chofshi, this Tshuva Real. It's not a response to a situational event. It's not, the Tshuva is not motivated by outside factors. The Tshuva comes about, how? By my initiative. In the situation of Tshuva, I don't initiate anything. I respond to situations, to experiences, to outside agents. Here I don't respond, no one presses me, no one addresses itself to me. But from within, somehow, a new person emerges, and two images join, and unity of the personality is found. We find it, so what is Tshuva? As a matter of fact, according to Yehadus, Chet, I said it many times here, Chet does not contaminate the whole personality. No. Because if Chet had contaminated the whole personality, if the whole personality, both images who were involved in Chet, if both images who were defiled, if both images who were alienated, so then how would the Baal Tshuva start out? Where would the Balshuva find our comedian focal for which to move, not the world? But they pleased himself. So according to Chazal, what person, who is involved in it, is the empirical man. Ideal man, whose image is engraved in Kisei HaKodesh, he has never been defiled. He has never been defiled. The trouble of chet is that man identifies himself with the wrong personality. You know, we have in Hebrew, we have two terms. Nidochim and Eidim. We just, Rosh Hashanah, he said it in Musa. The beautiful Pasuk of Isaiah. Boy of Ayim, who you talk of the shape of God, O boy, Eidim, Beretz Asher, Ba Nidochim, Beretz Mitzrayim, Vishtachu, Ad Hashem, Ba Akidik, Yerushalayim. A great horror shall be born, and it shall come, that we are lost in the land of Assyria. And they that were captives or prisoners in the land of Egypt. As a matter of fact, we are speaking here about political prisoners and political captives. But there is a personalistic captive, personalistic prison. It means the real man is a man identifies himself not with the ideal image of it, but with the empirical image of it. And it's a wrong identification. And but when man is aroused to tshuva, aroused by himself. So what happens? What happens? Happens the process of tshuva. What happens? He initiates a process of redemption. Whom does he redeem? Whom does he redeem? Whom does he redeem? He redeems himself. Redeems himself. Where was he? Why, where was he? Where was this genuine self? Where was this genuine self? Either in captivity, or he was lost somewhere in the labyrinth of modern living. But whatever happened to the genuine self, who is not involved in this thing. Men didn't identify with him. Men rejected him. Men denounced him. And he was a captive, a prisoner, in a far off land. What happened to Yom Kippur? Men re-identified himself. He identifies him. There is an identification of man. Not with his empirical self, but with the ideal self, whose image is engraved in Kisei HaKodesh. And let me tell you, the ideal image, basically, you see, you know, men suffer from frustration very much. I mean, according to the existentialists of today, frustration is not just incidental, it's a part of the human living experience, I would say. It's not just incidental. A man does business, he fails, he's frustrated. No. Even the most successful man who succeeded in all at all levels of human living is frustrated. This is the tragedy of Kohelet. But what is the tragedy of Kohelet? Frustration. Kohelet was very successful in terms of material success. He succeeded on the end, all that, and still was frustrated. Why was he frustrated? Frustration is a result from this hidden in the human personality. And they actually, when one is frustrated, what does he dream of? I don't know, perhaps I'm crazy, but what does he dream of? We are all frustrated, don't be ashamed, admit it. Serving Kita Fidri is very important. It cleanses the mind and it restores, I mean, self-confidence and faith in that. When we are frustrated, so we would like We want our children to be what we have not succeeded. So, father sees himself in the son. Daughter more in the son than in the daughter. How mother sees herself, I don't know. I've never been a mother. But anyway, father sees himself in the son. All I've got to say is his daughter as well. Okay? If he has only girls, there's no choice. What does he, how does he see himself in the son? His empirical self? No. He doesn't want the son to be his empirical self. Chas v'shalom, he doesn't want, no. Because he's frustrated. He is lost. He's disappointed. He's enchanted in life. He wants to see this in his son the self as his dreams, the self as his hopes, the self as his ambitions, the self as his imagination, the self as his expectations. Who is that self? Who is that self? He wants to find in the son. And that's why a father, you know, our immigrant fathers who came to the United States, he had shown so much understanding for education, which I don't believe any other generation has displayed, has manifested. I mean, fathers and mothers who themselves were illiterate, who hardly could sign their names, or didn't sign their names. Fathers and mothers who did not understand anything, spend days and nights in sweatshops in order to give an excellent education to their children. All right, you tell me the Jews are always have had respect for intellectual achievement. But if we are not speaking about scholars, we are speaking about Jews who are as primitive as what shall I say, as the peasants of the last century in Russia. Primitive Jews came to the United States. In the United States came the Jews from small towns, villages, primitive. They were primitive in their own environment, and they remain primitive in the United States. And still they have so much understanding for the education, for the promotion of their children, that sometimes I'm awestricken by that. They sacrifice the best. I mean, they used to work, but not as cleaning away. Mothers used to clean, used to wash laundry on me, serve as domestics in order to make it possible for the son or the daughter to get a college degree or to be trained in a certain profession. What is it? Because they were frustrated in their life. And their ideal self of their dream, they saw in their children. And as I said, this ideal self is never involved in sinning. The mysterious eye is never tainted or defiled. It remains clean and immaculate. The empirical eye is the sinner, the ideal never. And what happens on Yom Kippur? This is the greatness of the day of Yom Kippur. Man finds himself. Man finds himself, and once he finds himself, so there is then the process of transhumanization. He's initiated, and then he doesn't have to ask for pardon. There's no need to ask for pardon. Because why? Because I haven't seen it. You see, if you respond to situational factors, so then you have to ask for pardon. Because I've seen it. I'm the same person. I changed my actions, but I haven't changed myself. So if I ask, if I beg, if I petition a Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's for pardon. And that's when Shuvei, when Shlichem Chilei is an act of grace, which the Almighty bestows upon man. He is a sinner, but God cleans the sin. He is a sinner, but God removes the stain. He is a sinner, but God forgives him. He is a sinner, but God in his grace, I mean, simply pardons him. This is as far as the first tshuva is concerned. But as far as the second tshuva is concerned, so there is no need for chesed. Here he wins the case without, I mean, falling back on grace. There is no need for an act of grace on the part of the Almighty in order to pardon, because he doesn't require, there is no need for pardon. Who comes in? A sinner comes in. What happens in Kippur? The sinner finds himself. And once he finds himself, he changes his identity. The identity at the end of the day of Yom Kippur has never been involved in chetz. The identity is pure, clean, and innocent. And that's why man is great. He can recreate himself. He can accomplish the miracle of humanization and transfiguration. And that's what Rabbi Akiva said. Ashrechem Yisrael, lishnimi atem mitarim, umi mitayer eschem, avichem shem shmai. He didn't say mi mechata lachem. Very interesting. He didn't say mi mechata lachem. Who grants you atonement? He didn't say it. He could have said, avichem shem shmai mechata lachem. But he says, mi mitayer eschem. He declares you as Tehillim, not a pardon. He declares you innocent. He acquits you. He declares you as Tehillim, not a pardon. He declares you innocent. He acquits you. Because the person who comes in Erev Yom Kippur is the empirical self. At the end of the day, that new enemy begins to say, Ati is Dalt and Eshmerish, but the Tehillim Amir Fanecho. Another person replaces the empirical self, the ideal self, that is near it. And the ideal self is also higher and powerful. He is Torah from the very beginning. And the greatness of the day of Yom Kippur, it stimulates man, it inspires man to seek himself, to seek and find himself. And by seeking and finding himself, he finds the Almighty.